Fan Morning Show is brought to you by Guardian Protection, your hometown home and business security company. It is 9:03. Time to stop blindly paying those increasing auto and home insurance premiums. Contact the Buell Insurance Agency in Gibsonia. See what they can do for you. I have a Steelers offensive line take to give at the end of this segment. But we are spending a decent amount of time on the backyard brawl today. And one of the great legends of backyard brawl past, from a day that I wish I could forget, is joining us right now. That is, of course, December 1st, 2007, as it is referred to in West Virginia. It is referred to 13-9 around these parts, and we are right now talking with Scott McKillop. Scott, how are you today? Big week. Thank you for joining us.
I'm doing well. Hopefully I'll be even better Saturday around 7 o'clock.
Well, it's unique for you, isn't it? And I did want to mention to the people, Doran not here today. He's under the weather, hoping he's obviously back tomorrow and ready to go on the sidelines for the backyard brawl. It's unique for you, Scott, because you are, as I understand it, married to a West Virginia fan. And do you live in West Virginia? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, I live in Hurricane, West Virginia. It's halfway in between Charleston and Huntington. I've been down here for about 8 years. Living in enemy territory.
So if Pitt were to lose, you would hear it more than just your average regular Pitt fan.
Yeah, I've been hearing it a lot ever since last year. I mean, I went to the game. Unfortunately, it didn't turn out the way I or any Pitt fan would like to. So 100% I will hear it. I mean, when I go into work, I have to hear that infamous Pitt chant numerous places. I hear it from my wife. I hear it from my mother-in-law, my father-in-law, my brother-in-law. And I think at times they try and brainwash my daughter and son to say it too.
It's okay. I have a wife who went to Pitt. I'm a big West Virginia guy. And my daughter the other day said she's rooting for Pitt this weekend. So I understand where you're coming from. Can you just dispel one thing? All your family, I'm sure, has teeth, right? Because that's what I'm getting all the time. All you West Virginia fans don't have teeth. Scott, your family's got teeth.
Everyone in my family has teeth.
Excellent.
I am biased, obviously, more towards Pitt and WVU. But living down here and it growing a part of me, the one-liners and everything that everyone says about people from West Virginia, can be found anywhere in the United States.
I agree with that, and I'm happy that you said it, because when I say it, nobody believes me. All right, let's talk about the thing everybody wants you to talk about coming on here, Scott, and that is December 1st, 2007. You had 9 tackles. Were you out there and reacting? I guess what I'm trying to ask is, did you black out a little bit? Because you were all over the place, man.
Honestly, obviously that was one of the biggest wins of my playing career ever. And anytime I try and bring it up to any WVU fan, they're always like, close the yearbook, Uncle Rico. that game, everything went right for us. Every player was in the right place at the right time. Every player made big plays. I think Paul Rhodes, who was the defensive coordinator, you know, we had so many unsung heroes that made plays that, as a result, led to us winning.
Scott McKillop with us here on the Fan Morning Show. You had a great plan going into the game. Paul Rhodes did a wonderful job, and then he winds up going to Auburn to be their defensive coordinator. So that was seen around the country as a great game plan. Obviously, Dave Wannstedt on the crutches. Going into the game, did you have expectations, Scott, that you were going to win the game? Or was it once you got into the flow of the thing, you started to look around and go, man, we can get these guys?
I think any time you go into a game, you think you have a chance. I mean, how realistic it was, probably not the best. But, I think after the first quarter, you know, when we came and we're sitting on the sideline in between series, you know, just looking around and, you know, we had blank stares on our face because, I mean, if you look at how well they performed before and after, it's like something's not right. Like, it's almost like, pinch me, this isn't real. And honestly, I was waiting for – you know, those big plays that happened, and it just never happened. And it was just something where, you know, I didn't believe it until the clock hit zero that we actually won.
There's the infamous press conference from Rich Rodriguez after the game where you can hear the Pitt locker room in the background just going bonkers. Take us inside and what that moment was like, you and your brothers in there after that victory.
No, I mean, it was awesome. You know, I'm not going to say the players' names for the other team, but, you know, before the game, you know, there's a lot of players that you played up against in high school, and we heard numerous people saying that, like, you know, we got champagne on the rocks in the locker room for after the game. These are WVU players saying this. And, you know, I never, like, called them out like an umpire, but I'm just thinking to the back of my head, like, what are you guys doing? You still haven't played, you know, and after the game, you know, we're celebrating. You can hear us jumping up and down. I mean, we're taking Gatorade bottles and spraying them like it's champagne. I mean, yeah, that was our national championship game. That was our bowl game. Say what you want, WVU fans, but, like, we won. We could do what – like, when you win, you can do and say whatever you want.
Do you feel that this year's team is going to make you guys proud when you watch the tape and what they've done the last couple of weeks? How do you feel like the game's going to play out this weekend, Scott?
Well, I mean, you know, I've watched both teams play. Obviously, unfortunately, I have to watch some of the WVU games because of, you know, I'm married to a woman who loves WVU football. I think, you know, I like to put last year's game, like, completely forget about it. I think both teams, it's going to be a good game. You know, it'll be interesting which quarterback shows up for Pitt and West Virginia. I mean, because if you look at Garrett Green, how he performed against Penn State, I mean, I'm not going to say quarterback names, but it was just like, who is that? I mean, they were screaming Heisman chance for him when Pat McAfee was in Morgantown. And, you know, Holstein in the first half, it was, I don't know who it was. One of the things that I'll say about Holstein is I think that as a former player and as a fan and as an alum, I respect, and I think he gained a lot of trust with fans with owning up to how bad he played in the first half and basically said, hey, that's on me. And I thought that was awesome because as a redshirt freshman, you typically don't see that. You see a lot of pointing fingers or just not saying anything. But I think it's going to be a close game. I think it's going to be relative to the game 2 years ago at Heinz Field, Acrisure Stadium, where, you know, it's going to be whoever has the ball on the last drive of the fourth quarter who makes a big mistake.
Scott, we appreciate you coming on. This was hard for me without Doran. I was hoping he would ask all the 13-9 questions, but then the responsibility falls on me. So thank you for coming on. Enjoy watching the game this weekend, and maybe I'll run into you down there, all right?
Yeah, definitely. I'll be up there, and to all the Pitt fans, I'll be having a tailgate. Come by, look for the McKillop flag. I'll be looking to drink some adult beverages and have a good time.
Awesome. Hey, thanks a lot again, Scott, for coming on. We'll talk soon.
I appreciate it. Hail to Pitt.
Take care. Scott McKillop. God, that was hard. You got to sell to the audience. You got to give the audience what they want. There's a lot of West Virginia people in the audience. It's a Pitt's flagship. I got to ask the 13-9 questions.
Did Shannon Sharp say that in the video?
Say what?
You said that was hard.
He didn't. He didn't say that. It may have been said, but it wasn't. Yeah, he didn't. Mm-mm. Fan Hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, providing trusted plumbing and HVAC service for over 50 years. And you can text us, brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. I got a Steelers offensive line take in just a second here. The one thing about that game that I remember, because I've never watched it again, never will, is that in real time, I thought, boy, Pitt's actually getting screwed here. Like, that game could have been 26-9. West Virginia just did not play well. And I thought they called a number of holding calls. At least in my mind's eyes, I remember only having seen it the one time. A lot of holding calls weren't exactly holding calls. You think the Big East wanted West Virginia to play for the national championship? Probably. Knowing what was coming right down the pike, knowing what they had already experienced with conference realignment, don't you think they wanted a team play for the national championship? I'm sorry, I can't say that that didn't happen. It did. And then Paul Rhodes, Dave Wannstedt, they come up with a great game plan. And as Scott said, and we talked to him about this last year, you just always expected Devine or Slayton to make the play. And then, of course, White got hurt. You expect him to make a play. They didn't make a play. It never came. Awesome going down memory lane there. This was so much fun for me. Tweet us, brought to you by South Hills Kia. Peter Stalchik, visit them at southhillskia.net. All right, offensive line take. So yesterday, see some video coming out of Steelers practice. Dan Moore Jr. listed on the injury report as not practicing. Left side, Broderick Jones. Right side, Troy Faltanu. And let's not overthink this, Steelers. I don't think they would bench Dan Moore after the game he played, even if they believe, and they do, in Troy Faltanu. You're not going to bench Dan Moore. He played really well. Maybe the best game he's ever played as a Steeler. Go look at the PFF grade, but just watch the game. He was great. Matthew Judon, not a factor in the game. Big-time money dude. You bring him in, not a factor. Dan Moore had a lot to do with that. But don't overthink it. The same way the Steelers have been given an opportunity here to get an extra good, hard, long look, Shannon Sharpe, at Justin Fields, now you've been given a chance to get a look at Broderick Jones at left tackle. The most obvious thing in the world is to play your two first-round tackles and let this be the first day of the rest of our offensive line lives. I think the Pirates deserve a ton of criticism for the way that things went with Henry Davis. Such has been admitted, actually, on these airwaves by people within the organization that maybe he should have been focusing more on catching. He comes up to the big leagues. You throw him in right field. He's got the strong arm. He's got the work ethic. That was not the fit. And then he's thinking about things he shouldn't be thinking about. He's trying to learn a full pitching staff, all the while hit big league pitching. And I think that takes a toll on the confidence. Broderick Jones did really good things at times last year at right tackle. Omar Khan, though, this offseason said that that's your left tackle of the future. Well, now's the future. Now's your opportunity. Let him be the left tackle for the next 10 years. Let Troy Faltanu make his Steelers debut and let him be the right tackle of the future for the next 10 years. Because my guy, Zach Frazier, in the middle of the field was unbelievably good in game one. You have a chance here to finally have an offensive line that's worth anything for the first time since you had DeCastro and Marquise Pouncey and Alejandro Villanueva making the Pro Bowl and Ramon Foster battling his tail off every week. You've had bad offensive line play mostly since then. If you don't put in Broderick and Faltanu now, when are you going to do it? Now's the time. Don't overthink it. All right, coming up next, Doug Whaley. Yesterday, out of the blue on our show. Who's better, Sean Payton, Mike Tomlin? Who's had a better career, Sean Payton, Mike Tomlin? We let you hear what Whaley said. I'll give you my opinion when we come back. Some more brawl mixed in with our Steelers preview tomorrow. Pat White scheduled to join us. So that'll maybe make me feel a little bit better after I'm still smarting from talking to Scott McKillop in the last segment. Yesterday, Doug Whaley joined us on the show. He does every Wednesday, 9 o'clock until 10. He had an interesting Sean Payton take. We'll get to that in a moment, but I teased this earlier, never got to it. I have been told Russell Wilson is more significantly injured than being let on. And I don't think he has even a snowball's chance in hell of playing this week. Now, we've been operating the way that Mike Tomlin said they've been operating, and that is to say, hey, they might leave the light on for him. I don't really think there's a light on for Russell Wilson. And again, from what I'm hearing, it might not matter what Justin Fields does this week. He's probably going to be the starter week three. I've been told this by somebody that's got an intimate knowledge of what's going on down there, that while Russ appeared to try to play on Sunday, and people asked, why isn't he rolling out? Why is he not running around trying to prove he can go out there? Because he can't. At least he couldn't then. Yesterday, listed as limited. The video I saw, he not doing junk. So I would be shocked if he practiced in full today. I'm guessing he'll be limited. I'm guessing he'll be limited again on Friday. But I don't know that he's good to go, and I would predict that he's not good to go for week number three even. All right, now for Doug Whaley's thoughts on Sean Payton. And my question was, hey, Doug, Sean Payton a good coach?
No. I'll say this. Again, he's supposed to be a quarterback. He's a good offensive play caller. Is he a good coach? I'd say no, because hasn't developed one quarterback. Right? And we'll see, the jury's out on this Bo Nix. And I think that, and this is speculation, that's why he was jet-setting of Russell Wilson. Because he wanted to get a young quarterback and prove to everybody I'm as good as everybody thinks I am, or I'm telling you I am, because I'm going to take Bo Nix and take him to where I know Russell Wilson couldn't take us. And because it's going to be on me and how I developed him, how I call plays, and how I did all this. It's about Sean Payton. It's not about winning footballs. And that's the difference between, you talk about Sean Payton and Mike Tomlin. Mike Tomlin's about winning football. I don't care how it is. We got Ben, we're going to throw it all over the place. We don't have Ben, we're going to keep it close. Don't turn the ball over and win with defense. That's a true coach. Win with what you have. It's not about, well, this is my system, this is how we got to do it, and I don't care. We're going to go down with the ship. And that's why I think Sean Payton is a good play caller, but not a good head.
I think a lot of people, you can pick and choose what you think makes a guy a good football coach or a great football coach. For me, I want to see him hoist a Lombardi. Both of these guys have done it, Sean Payton, Mike Tomlin. But if your definition of a good coach is he needs to develop a quarterback, then Mike Tomlin can't be a good coach. What quarterback did Mike Tomlin develop? Oh, look, Sean Payton gets Drew Brees, and there's a lot of talk about he really wanted Dante Culpepper. The Dolphins went out and they got Dante Culpepper instead of Drew Brees, and they made the mistake, and Sean Payton wound up getting that gift. At the end of Drew Brees' time in San Diego, he was putting up pretty good statistics. They had themselves down there a little bit of a controversy because they just drafted Phillip Rivers. So 2 good years of Drew Brees in San Diego, he goes, continues doing pretty much the exact same thing for about 5 years in New Orleans before he really took off and started putting up huge numbers. Mike Tomlin, of course, inherits Ben Roethlisberger. What did it look like with Sean Payton outside of Ben, or outside of Brees? I mean, what, Trevor Siemian and Jameis Winston and Taysom Hill, and they were able to get to a winning mark one of those years. That's not dissimilar to what the Steelers did with Duck Hodges and Mason Rudolph, or frankly, even what happened last year at 10-7 with Mason Rudolph, Mitch Trubisky, and Kenny Pickett. I look at these guys as mirror images of each other. Sean Payton has a 9-8 record in the playoffs. Mike Tomlin, 8-10. Sean Payton, a winning percentage of 618. Mike Tomlin, regular season, 634. Now, Sean Payton's had more losing seasons than Tomlin because all you need is one for that. He's had 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Bang. West Virginia math. I nailed it. So if you want to consider that a tiebreaker, okay. If you want to consider playoff record a tiebreaker the other way, where Sean Payton's above 500, Mike Tomlin's not, okay. I think both guys are similar. They've proven that they can win some games with less than ideal quarterback situation. They did the bulk of their work with great quarterbacks. And they also failed with great quarterbacks too. You know, Sean Payton went 13-3, 13-3, 12-4, in 18, 19, and 20. Drew Brees playing great football, couldn't get over the hump. Mike Tomlin with Ben and the Killer Bees, playoff loss after playoff loss. And I think both guys are similar in this way, too. Mike Tomlin known for defense. He's a defensive guy. You think about the playoffs. Playoffs, Mike Tomlin, his defense, getting their heads kicked in the playoffs. The Browns game, the Jags game, the Patriots AFC Championship. Last year in Buffalo actually felt like an okay defensive performance, just giving up a mere 31 instead of the on average 45 they had been giving up the prior 3 playoff appearances. On average. Mike Tomlin, known for defense, guess what happens? The defense lets him down in the playoffs. Sean Payton, known as this offensive guru, this offensive genius, and yet where's the quarterbacks he's developed? Oh. By their own admission, it was a disaster with Russell Wilson, right? Didn't go well last year with Russ. Couldn't get the best out of him in his own mind, right? I mean, that's why you get rid of him. You didn't get enough out of him. Well, you're supposed to be a football quarterback genius. Didn't happen. So the thing that Sean Payton's supposed to be good at, I don't know that he's actually all that good at. He inherited Drew Brees. I watched Bo Nix last week. He stunk. He stunk. And that's not just box score merchant. I'm prepared. I do my homework. I watch the guy. He stunk. Game one rookie, understand that. But he stunk. And you move on from Russell Wilson for that. He's not a quarterback whisperer. He's incredibly overrated there. But Mike Tomlin, on the flip side, this defensive mastermind genius, right? Just ask the national media. Defense stinks in the playoffs. Defense bad down the stretch last year. Both guys given credit for things that they're not really all that good at. Both guys have checkered playoff success. Both guys have had a ton of regular season success. Both guys inherited franchise quarterbacks. You can't say one is bad and not say the same about the other. You can't say one is good and not say the same about the other. They go about it different ways. The results have been awfully similar. 412-928-9370. I'm getting all fired up about Sean Payton. I do think he's a jerk. So there's that. And he dragged Russell Wilson through the mud this offseason. I'm so fired up, my heart's beating. Schedule a heart screening today. Trust the nationally ranked experts at UPMC for your heart care. I guess you always want your heart to be beating. I mean, it's beating quite rapidly. All right, coming up next, I stumbled into something at the end of the Scott McKillop segment. I've never watched 13-9 after it happened live. There's another game I have never watched after it happened live. And there's one that I watched that I shouldn't have watched, and I'm mad that I did, and it has to do with these Denver Broncos. I wonder if you might have similar experiences. 412-928-9370. We'll get to it next. Point of clarification, obviously Sean Payton didn't inherit Drew Brees. He did luck into Drew Brees, wanted Dante Culpepper. But I look at Sean Payton, I look at Mike Tomlin, I see the same guy. They go about it different, but very similar results. And I think both could have gotten more, frankly, out of their franchise quarterbacks. 412-928-9370. We might have to talk to Starkey, Callis, and petition to take his show over tomorrow because we're going to be absolutely jam-packed. We got a lot going on. We got a ton of preview stuff, of course, for Atlanta. Well, they just played Atlanta. For Denver, we got Russ Wilson, Justin Fields, injury report to react to. What's going on with Dan Moore Jr.? We're going to go across the country and talk to somebody who covers the Broncos for Denver. We got Pat White coming on. We got Lee Sterling coming on. We got Chris Carter coming on. We got the brawl. We got Broncos. We don't have enough time.
We just give Joe and Austin the day off.
I think we do. I think we go from, I haven't run this by Doran. I think we go from 5:40 until 2 and just get it all in there.
I'd actually like to see you try to handle that.
Hey, Doran, I know you're sick, so you're not close to 100%. How do you feel about doing 8 hours and 20 minutes tomorrow? Just not enough time. We got Social Media's Biggest Loser coming up to wrap up the show. Brought to you by Awaken 180 Weight Loss. Reserve your consultation today at awaken180weightloss.com. We were talking to Scott McKillop earlier about that December 1st, 2007 game. That's what I call it. A lot of you out there call it 13-9. It's a game I've never watched back. Never will watch it back. I like to watch old games. Whether my team wins or loses, the classics, I like to go back memory lane. I like to get historical context. I've watched all the old Steelers Super Bowls multiple times. You watch championship DVDs. You watch some of the bad ones. We'll never watch 13-9. Have never watched back the Super Bowl where the Steelers lost to the Packers. Super Bowl 45.
Now, if I
that one was so painful. And my dad and I got hammered off of Jameson that night.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
You remember we were at Doran's house for the wild card game, and then we started watching YouTube when the game ended?
Yeah.
And the game came on automatically through...
What game came on?
The Packers-Steelers game. And we're all just sitting there uncomfortably. I think you were still there.
I don't think I was. I don't recall this.
Okay, well, yeah, I was getting agitated, and a couple other guys, I think Mueller was still there or something, but we were getting agitated. And I was like, turn it off! I can't watch it.
That was the worst Steelers loss for me that I have experienced, and there's been many. I mean, you think about the 90s and the AFC championships, you think about Neil O'Donnell in the Super Bowl, you think about Cowher in the early 2000s in the AFC championships. There's been a lot. There's a game that I think gets dragged into that conversation that, for my money, doesn't really belong there, actually. And this is a super hot take. This is a game that I watch back and wish I wouldn't have because it was so ugly. The Tebow game. The Demaryius Thomas game. The Ike Taylor game. Whatever you want to call it. It was ugly. You lost to a bad football team. There's no other way to cut it. I mean, their head coach stinks. Josh McDaniels was he's terrible. You had no business losing that game. That one doesn't hurt me the way that the AFC Championship games hurt me, the way that Super Bowl 45 hurt me, because Ben got hurt in the lights go out game in San Francisco and was a statue and couldn't move. They weren't going to win the next week anyhow. If the Steelers had gone into Denver and taken care of business, and that's what it would have been, they should have still won the game, but they would have got their clocks cleaned the following week. Like, that one doesn't do it for me. I heard Starkey, I think, say yesterday or the day before, since it's Denver Broncos week, that might be the most embarrassing loss in Steelers history. I don't think that's even worse than the Browns game in COVID. Yeah, okay, Tebow throws what? Completes 10 passes for 316 yards, then it was Tebow 316 and all that, and you couldn't cover, you couldn't tackle, it was brutal, and that is embarrassing. Is it any more embarrassing than losing to the Browns without their head coach at home and your first offensive play, you snap it over your Hall of Fame quarterback's head and he makes a business decision and doesn't try to recover the football? That, to me, is way more embarrassing. Losing to Cleveland in a playoff game is embarrassing enough as it is. Your defense stinks. Your Hall of Fame quarterback turns it over a bunch, and you lose to a head coachless Browns team. That's more embarrassing. The Jacksonville playoff game more embarrassing. Blake Bortles, for God's sakes. And the difference between that and Tim Tebow, for God's sakes, is that I thought the Steelers could win the Super Bowl. I thought the Tebow game they were going to lose next week no matter what, and it probably wasn't going to be pretty. But when they played Jacksonville for the second time that year, I thought they were going to get right. I thought they were going to bludgeon them. They had their minds made up all season long that they were going to play the Patriots two times. Those games far more embarrassing to me. Far harder to put back onto YouTube. The Tebow one stunk. It was ugly, but I think those losses are worse and more embarrassing for sure. Chime in, 412-928-9370. Text me, same phone number. Up next, social media's Biggest Loser. 50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Route 19 in Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. I thought Josh McDaniels was the head coach of that Broncos team in the Tebow game, but it was John Fox. I'm not sure that makes it better. In fact, it doesn't. Because I don't think that guy's a good head football coach. But I misremembered. For that, I apologize. I'm very sorry about it. Shannon Sharp kind of apologized last night. If you missed it, you must not have social media. Shannon Sharp, according to his own words, said that he threw his phone down on the bed, and then it miraculously, accidentally, started to Instagram Live. The rest is history, as Shannon Sharp was caught in the act of consensual sexual intercourse. And this was broadcast now to, I'm guessing at this point, because the clip is out there, millions of people. Now, we're not talking video. We are only talking audio. And I'm just going to level with you. Of course I listened to it. Why the heck would I not listen to it? Shannon Sharp addressed all this with Chad Ochocinco on their podcast last night. And, well, Chad gave it to him. Sorry, bad phrasing.
Ain't nothing wrong with your hips, you know, but we got to work on your cardio, because you was breathing heavy. You shouldn't be breathing that heavy. So we got to work on your cardio. So
Ocho,
when you lift weights, we got to get you on the car. Hit
Ocho,
the treadmill
but you
first.
Ocho,
the step,
real talk,
the
Ocho,
master.
Your boy. Hey,
that was my thought. Listening to it as well, is that our guy Shannon Sharp is way out of breath, way out of breath. I mean, he's working vigorously. Congratulations to him. But he's grunting. A lot of ums up in there. Did not sound healthy. And we've all seen Shannon Sharp. I mean, Shannon Sharp, see, he pops through that suit wherever he is, ESPN now. I mean, that's a big, strong, muscular man. But I think Ocho hit it right there on the head, Callis. I think you got to work on the cardio. Maybe get on the Stairmaster. Maybe a little rowing machine. Because our guy was out of breath. I don't think he's getting any trouble with ESPN. Does seem like a total accident. And I found his description of it to Chad Ochocinco I can't believe this is even a sentence or a conversation we're having. To be believable, he did seem to feel really bad. I think particularly for the woman involved, it's very embarrassing. It's not something you want to have out there. I bought it. Hey, weird stuff's going to happen. But Shannon, go work on that cardio. If that were to happen to me, I'd be on the toilet or something. Like, I don't do anything interesting. I'd like Facebook Live or Instagram Live, like walking the dog, having pleasant conversations with the neighbors, things of that nature. Yes?
I don't know if I should share this story.
Then don't. Okay. Then don't.
I'll tell you.
We'll vet it. We'll vet it, and that'll be a tease for tomorrow morning's pre-show at 5:40. Yeah, I've learned quite a few things in my time in Radio Callis, and you know I have a different threshold than a lot of people on what I'm going to say. If you think for a second it might not be good, don't say it. We'll flesh that out. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Hopefully Doran is back. Big day previewing the Steelers and Broncos, previewing the Backyard Brawl. This was a fun one as well. Thanks to Bostic and everyone else who joined us. Fan weather brought to you by Sun Chevrolet. 2024 Chevy Silverado 1500, 1.9% financing up to 36 months with approved credit through GM Financial. Full terms at sunchevy.com. Today, high 85.